Welcome to the Parent Equation Podcast with me, Aisha Murray. This podcast series is full of inspiring stories from working parents who are passionate about designing a life that works for them and their families. Working parents like you who want a purposeful, rewarding career alongside a balanced family life. So today I'm joined by Alexis Kingsbury. Alexis is the founder of Parentpreneur, Spider Gap and Air Manual. So welcome, Alexis.
Oh, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Now, the one that stuck out for me there, obviously, given the title of this podcast, is Parentpreneur. So maybe let's just start there and then see where we go from there. So where did that start from? What was a catalyst and sort of business idea, I guess, behind Parentpreneur?
Yeah, so at the point that I created that business, I'd been running, I'd run a few businesses over the years and had got to a point where my first software business, which was Spider Gap, which is an online 360 feedback tool, so it's sort of B2B, I'd got that to a point that was starting to grow nicely. And so I was kindly asked by June Angelides, MBE, to speak at one of her Mums in Technology events on the subject of how to start a successful business. Yeah. And so I was asked to come and do two workshops, and I ran those sessions essentially to show, partly to say, look, I'm not sure I'd regard myself as a success at this point. Mm-hmm. But what I can tell you is that about the failures that I've had and how you can avoid them. Mm-hmm. And the reason I felt really passionate about it because at the time I'd certainly got one, possibly two children at that point.
You're losing track of them already.
Indeed, yeah. Can remember their names. There's only two, but you know that is it's lack of sleep. At that time, you know, I'd had the experience of trying to grow a business whilst also having a baby and then, you know, young child, and knowing that it kind of brings sleep deprivation and all the challenges and timing and so on. But also you're very conscious that any time that you're spending on trying to build the business, particularly when it's not really giving you a financial return, is time that you could be spending with your partner and child.
Yeah.
And any money that you're investing in the business is money that could potentially be spent on their education or holidays together or whatever it is. And so that felt acutely painful, more so than in the past when I had attempted to create startup businesses. Like, you know, back when I was at university, it didn't matter really in the scheme of things. You know, having an extra bit of money was a bonus. Working evenings, et cetera, was just a brilliant way of ignoring my coursework. So as a result, like, it didn't matter so much. Whereas being a parentpreneur was like, yeah, it made a huge difference. And so I loved the fact that I was helping this group to avoid these mistakes. But I was asked after those sessions, like, okay, can I get more help? You know, found that really useful. Can I get some coaching? And I was busy with my own software business. And although I had a consulting business as well, like the prices that I'd be charging for my corporate clients, these, at the start of startup journey, wouldn't have been able to pay those prices. So I said, well, bear with me, let me create something. And so I started the Parentpreneur Accelerator podcast. Mm-hmm. I created an accelerator program that was online to support them. And over a course of, I think, a couple of years, kind of supported a group of first mainly mums, but then dads who were trying to build their businesses with young kids. And it was hugely rewarding, not only because there were some successful businesses that came out of it, and also there were some like June, who joined the program, who actually didn't end up then running that business, but went on and did amazing things. Mm-hmm. And there are also people who actually, I helped them fail the business earlier, which sounds like a really odd thing to take pride in. But often when you're starting a new business, you know, it's often described as like your baby. It's this new thing that you're excited about and you think it's a great idea. And often that's super dangerous. If you think it's a great idea, be really, really careful, because what matters really is whether other people, and particularly your ideal customers, do they think it's a great idea? And are you solving a problem that's painful enough that they would pay for it? And so that's what I was helping them to do, is go through a series of steps to absolutely demonstrate not just to yourself, but to anyone, mm-hmm. like, you know, objectively, that there's demand for this, and as a result, you can build it. And so we were helping some entrepreneurs fail their business mm-hmm. much earlier because they're identifying, yeah, there's not an audience mm-hmm. for this, or people love this, but no one wants to pay for it, or people love this and they want to pay for it, but not mm-hmm. enough versus mm-hmm. the cost of what we've got to do. But we were helping them to do that before they were spending yeah. thousands of pounds on advertising, mm-hmm. months or even years of their life just mm-hmm. trying to bash their head against a brick wall, all the money on software solutions and things that, you know, yeah. promise the next big result around mm-hmm. the corner, mm-hmm. and yet actually there's a fundamental flaw in your business that means that no amount of that, if marketing funnels or special lead magnets or whatever, mm-hmm. are going to help you achieve that goal. So it was an amazing journey. I'm really proud of what we achieved for people. I got to speak to some fantastic entrepreneurs out there that also had kids through the podcast. And then I sold the business to a fantastic guy, Michael Kittinger, who has a similar background to me, mm-hmm. But is now taking it kind of okay. taking on the baton while yeah. I then move on to my other software yeah. businesses. And, yeah. You know, we still collaborate and work together, and I'm really excited about mm-hmm. what he's now doing.
So parentpreneur versus entrepreneur, mm. there's the same underlying factors, obviously. Yeah. What in your experience of this and of mentoring and mm-hmm. developing those parents in their businesses, what are the fundamental differences, apart from obviously the children and the responsibility and the risk is much, much higher, yeah. as you mentioned already, time less potentially to invest yeah. in time and effort into the business. Apart from those obvious sort of kid-related factors, was there anything fundamentally different that a parent's mindset brought to it?
Yes. So I'd say, firstly, all of those things, exactly as you said, are some of the main differences. One of the impacts of that is that because the parent tends to have less time available mm-hmm. and it values that time more, yeah. it means that they have to be, and in some cases, more quickly realize that they have to be really good at prioritization. And that they have to focus in on the few things to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's true for all entrepreneurs, but mm-hmm. I tended to find that the parentpreneurs tended to get that faster yeah. because, you know, it's a bit like Parkinson's law. The mm-hmm. amount of work will swell to fill the time available. Yeah. And whereas when you're more limited, when mm-hmm. you can only work between drop off and mm-hmm. pick up and yeah. like, you are so time constrained mm-hmm. that it forces you to be really smart about how you use your time. And so one of the big things that we focused on is, okay, what are the key things that need to happen? What's the next obstacle, the next bottleneck, the next assumption that mm-hmm. you need to approve or work on so that you can kind of progress the business? Mm-hmm. I think that was a useful mindset. That often parentpreneurs kind of got more quickly than perhaps some entrepreneurs who are just like, no, I can just hustle. I'll just work yeah. weekends and evenings. Yeah. And that it's like, oh, great, you've got the time, but that's only worth it if you're mm. you know, pound for pound. It's like that would only be worth it if you were doing the same things and you were as focused and you were working on the next obstacle, which often it wasn't. It was all just like big ball of stuff that I can
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
So that was a useful attitude. I think one of the other things that I saw, and it's not universal, but it just seemed to correlate, was that the parentpreneurs seemed to have a much greater sense of purpose and passion. Yeah. Like they wanted mm-hmm. what they were doing to have meaning. It yeah. wasn't just like, oh, I want to earn some money or I want mm-hmm. to earn millions and have a driver supercar. Mm-hmm. It was, and that's not to say, oh, other entrepreneurs that haven't got kids want that. I just found that there was more of a correlation yeah. split, and instead it was like, no, I want to do something. I want to be a good role model for mm-hmm. my child. Mm-hmm. And so that was really nice because it meant that I was working with people who were passion centric and purpose orientated yeah. entrepreneurs mm-hmm. Who are actually trying to have a meaningful impact in the world. So that was really cool too.
Yeah, and also we all obviously want to leave a legacy for our children.
Yeah.
Role modeling absolutely in the day to day, and I talk about role modeling, I think every single podcast episode role modeling comes up for working parents. But that leaving that legacy behind and leaving something for our kids to say, either, you know, I'm really proud of my parents to have built that, I don't know, produced that, left that to me in an inheritance point of view, but just sort of showing them what's possible, showing them the opportunities available if we put our minds to it, hence our children. Your kids, you can do anything you want. in life, especially these days. I mean, especially these days, way more than our generation, perhaps. So I think that's such an important lesson, mindset difference potentially for parents involved, because it's the dependencies these children have on us.
Yes.
Is going to, and the purpose, as you say, is going to lead us in a different, not just heart-led, it's obviously all entrepreneur heart-led, it's going to just have a different pattern about it, I suppose, the way we approach it, perhaps.
Yeah, indeed. And I certainly agree that, like, showing them what is possible, and particularly over the last sort of 5-10 years, I think we've seen some encouraging progress in some aspects of, like, gender equality and appreciation about the concept of, you know, what one man can do, so can another, and actually that it's equally important that if you want to support equality and diversity of diversity at different levels and achievement and so on, you actually need to highlight those examples, like, look, this person did it, and as a result, so can you.
So I think
it becomes particularly important that people that aren't just, you know, white males, frankly, demonstrate, look, you can achieve these amazing things, and push past the real and perceived barriers, so that others can then go, oh, well, if they could do that, like, I could do that. And there's, like, loads of examples of this, like in sport, where no one had achieved, was it like the 4-minute mile or something, a marathon running, and then as soon as one person does, then suddenly you have loads to do. And similar for, like, high jumps and things, like, often it takes that, you know, I've seen it with my own kids, their hesitance to swim. It's like, daddy, I can't swim. And then you put them in a kid with another kid that might the same age or younger that can. And suddenly it's like, I can swim.
Yeah, the competitive spirit is ignited.
And it's amazing that we need that. So it's interesting. I think that as a result, it is important and useful for parents to demonstrate give the kids room to believe that actually, yeah, I can achieve what I want to achieve. However, I'm not sure whether, and it will vary, I'm not sure whether the creation of the business entity itself, whether the kids will value that. Like, if I think about, for example, my friends and peers that have inherited businesses from their parents and kept them going, I'm not sure they really, despite the fact that objectively you'd look at it and go, wow, you've been given this on the silver platter. You've got a business that has started off in 7 figures, and even if you just keep it running, that's in a great shape, but there's potential to make it 10 and you know, take it to 10 million and 100 million, whatever. I don't see them, like, going, oh, well done, my wonderful parents set up this business. You know, unfortunately, in some cases, they might look back at it and say, I wish they'd spent more time with me. So I think as a result, I'd encourage preppreneurs to avoid thinking, oh, yes, I'm creating this business as a legacy for them. It's better to be an example. And therefore, it's a useful thing to have in your head. Work on the assumption that you're not passing this business to them. In fact, I remember with them, it's a very personal story, but I remember with my mum, who she built, still runs a very successful business. And I remember at a particular point in my life history where I was doing some work for them, and I was like, look, you know, I'm enjoying this. I can see where I can add value. Do you think that this is something that I might take over? And she's like, I wouldn't want you to. Like, you know, you can achieve so much more than what I think you can do in this business. And so I think it's and in fact, her feeling, and I agree with her, would have been that going into that business would have been handcuffs for me. It would have held me back from doing other things. And so she encouraged me not to. And although upset at the time, because I thought, right, oh, am I not good enough for this? I now quickly came to understand that, no, it was the right decision. And so I think that's a useful thing for parentpreneurs to think about. It's like, yeah, if you're creating that business, don't be building the expectation that you're handing over the reins to them. Give them more freedom and encouragement and respect than that. Instead, work on the assumption that at some point you're going to have to sell it, or, you know, yeah, you're going to have to say it.
Yeah. It's interesting you say your mum built and ran or runs a very successful business, and talk about the role modelling. Surely that must be a direct example of how that's affected your life and your entrepreneurship.
Oh, definitely. I think, and in two big ways. So one being that it gave me build this business and you can achieve great things and so on. Although It's hard for me to untangle that versus what was innate in me, because I was entrepreneurial really, really like young. I was, you know, I was already wanting to do that. But then again, she was running the business from basically when I was born. So, yeah. So it's hard to unpick that. But yeah, so she's certainly inspiring in that respect. I think the other thing that I took away from it, rightly or wrongly, hope she doesn't listen to this, is that there were certainly times when growing up that I felt like the business was the enemy of me getting time with my mum. Mm. And so as a result, when I've been growing my own businesses, I've been very careful to make sure I'm protecting that time with my kids. And that although there are, of course, times when they're like, oh, daddy, can you play with me? I don't immediately go, oh, but I'm meant to be doing a podcast interview. So cancel that. I'm off to go play. But I do make sure that they get significant time with me and that they would never describe me as too busy for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's gone through me pretty deep.
Well, I think that's one of the risks that parents face, or maybe they're risks they shouldn't be thinking about. I think the risk when I speak to parents, they say, I can't jump ship from my potentially, for example, corporate career and start a new business. And you say, okay, why not? And it comes back to, I won't earn enough money quick enough. Yeah. I've got dependencies. I've got a mortgage to pay. I won't have enough time with the kids because I have to invest the time in my business, in my baby, as you said. So how can I possibly do both? But from what you're saying and your experience with your parentpreneur and with your own businesses, it is possible to run a successful business of your own and still be a successful and present father, parent. So obviously there are boundaries involved, and being very clear about your boundaries, how you set them and sticking to them. What else are you doing right that is allowing you to have both?
Yeah, so I'd say the boundaries one is a big one. So, and in fact, there have been times in my life where I've suddenly thought, why, I'm feeling, perhaps I'm starting to blur those boundaries or encroaching that and feeling like, I seem to be working a lot. And I'll just remember, it's like, yeah, but I'm not working into the evenings and the weekends. Why not? And that's because of decision. I'm choosing not to book time in my diary past 5:30, or choosing not to book time in my diary at the weekends, and choosing not to commit to tasks and things that mean that I'd be forced to do those things, or at least if they do, they are super rare events. So certainly the having boundaries and setting expectations and making commitments in line with those is really important. I'm trying to remember which, I think it was Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, that book, where he talks about like treating your partner like they're your most important client. So rather than like always being late for your partner because you're like, well, I had this important client I'd speak to. It's like, so what are you saying to them?
Yeah.
Whereas instead it should be, they're your most important client. So as a result, if you have to cut off early with another client to go to them, that's the right decision. So I think certainly boundaries is an absolute key one. I think the other thing is about, and this was crucial to me being able to scale the business as well. And it took me a long time, embarrassingly long time for me to understand this, but it's about utilizing others. So to some extent, entrepreneurship could be summarized into a two-step cycle. Mm. Step one, find what works, i.e. find the pain point that you're going to solve for the right customer, and how you would solve that pain point at an appropriate cost. Mm. How would you deliver that at a profit? How do you communicate that to a potential customer? How do you sell that? How do you get leads into that funnel? How do you convert them into sales? How do you then serve those customers, make sure you get the money in, and so on? Like all of those things, that's working out what works. As soon as you find something that does work, as soon as you find something that gets you your perfect customer, or that a way of having the conversation that means that you take a qualified lead and turn them into a sale, you need to be moving to step two, which is essentially systemizing it and getting it handed over to someone else. Whether it's a freelancer, part-time employee, friend, family member, or employee, you need to work out what is it that makes this work so well, get that captured as a series of essentially step-by-step checklists, and get that handed over to them so that you're then freed up again to be able to, A, that you don't have to remove your boundaries for time to grow the business, but B, that you then get time on evangelizing, going out and selling, or just moving back to step one, what is working out what works. So, for example, it might be that you've got the sales process working, so that's fantastic. You set that up, but now the challenge is, how do we deliver at scale? Like, we haven't worked, like, there's some kinks in this, and this isn't working cost effectively. So you work out what works, then get that systemized. Okay, now, brilliant, I've got someone who's, you know, delivering the training sessions or setting up people's landing pages, whatever your business does. And then it's, okay, so what's the next biggest challenge? And it might be, oh, they're not, you know, they're not doing a good enough job. So as a result, you need to work on that. How do I get to the point that they're delivering? And then come back out again. And it's going through that cycle, constantly looking at what is it that's the bottleneck in the business, work out to fix it, and then systemize it and pass it on to other people. Mm-hmm. And I held back from that for way too long. I'd probably say almost 10 years of me wanting to be the successful entrepreneur, right back from when I was like 13, 14 years old. I just, I constantly was building new businesses, different products, thinking, oh, I'll soon find something that scales, and not realizing that nearly any of those businesses could have scaled. but I never went, I never moved to step two. And so never had time to then go out and do more sales or, you know, whatever it is. So I think that's the key to how, as a parentpreneur, you keep that, you get both, you have to free up that time. But that can be hard because, you know, in my case, I was terrified about hiring and managing people because I was told that I'd be a bad people manager by someone I worked for, and I believed them.
Nice of them.
Indeed, yeah. Which the great irony is, of course, now I look back and go, oh, they were the bad people manager. Like, if I think, you know, if I think, imagine me saying that to one of my team, like, oh, I just don't think you've got the skills to be a people manager. I would, like, that would be like, oh, that's one of the worst things I could ever say. Like, you know, we were talking about setting expectations and showing what's possible and being a good role model. Like that's the worst kind of manager, is someone that starts to put limits on what your future potential is.
Yeah, absolutely. But is that the same with the kids?
indeed. Same with kids. So unfortunately, because I believe that it held me back for a while, but I think for a lot of people, they worry about, how am I going to pay this person? How am I going to make it work? Mm-hmm. And the reality is, the risk is a lot lower than you think, particularly because, let's say hypothetically, you bring someone in as I have done and got it wrong. Yes, it costs some money. Yes, it costs some time. But the learning then allows you to plug it back in. Mm-hmm. And particularly if you get help and advice from others that have been there, like listening to great podcasts like yours, then you're able to avoid some of those mistakes, and you're able to learn from others so that, you know, so that you don't make stupid mistakes like I did. Like, I hired a full-time salesperson who had done £1 million of sales in a similar software product the year before. So I thought, well, he'll be better at selling than I will. So I'll bring him in and he'll just sell £1 million of our software product, and I can sit back and just be like, amazing. And so I didn't give him any onboarding, no guidance, no processes, no training, nothing. And what do you think happened? Zero sales.
Yeah.
Right. And he was a really expensive sales guy. Mm-hmm. And so I quite relatively quickly ended up having to make him redundant. And sadly, a developer who's a friend of ours, particularly, was painful, and making them redundant. And yes, it set me back. But the learning I got from that meant the very next time I hired, I did have all of that in place. Now, I made new mistakes in different areas, but at least then, that time around, I was then able to get sales and it worked effectively. Mm-hmm. And I had new issues, which I'll happily go into. But like, that's the key, is that, and you can avoid some of the mistakes that people like myself have made by listening to people like me about what we've done and getting advice on how to do it differently.
Well, I'm firmly stuck in between step one and two. I'll happily admit that. So I'm going to listen to this podcast again later and make my own notes. I just wanted to go back to something you said about when you were a young teenager and starting your entrepreneur journey, perhaps younger than that. And again, with the opportunities that kids have available to them now, we're using the online world, et cetera, et cetera. Do you, and I'm trying to help my children develop that sort of sense of entrepreneurship as well. Do you think your kids, or have they already started to think in a kind of entrepreneurial way? And what kind of things might they start doing at a young age?
Yeah, so this is going to be quite funny. So so my son, he doesn't appear to be interested in the business side. His interests are more academic, more nature focused. As a result, wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being some kind of undersea scientist, kind of exploring the deeps and so on. My daughter, on the other hand, shows aptitude and interest in a wide range of areas, including like songwriting and all sorts of different things. But she did ask me, like, so how do I set up a business? I was like, oh, okay. And she's six, by the way. She's six. So I was like, you can imagine, I'm like, oh wow, like, here's my opportunity, trying to curb my enthusiasm, definitely don't lecture her, and so on.
Yeah.
So I try and talk gently about it and so on. And quite early on, she said, you can't tell Mummy and Ethan this. Like, you can't tell. I was like, oh, okay. Then she's like, no, you can't tell them that we're even, like, you can't tell them that that we're even doing this, right? And it's like, okay. So I'm under NDA, am I? And she's like, what's NDA? So I had to explain what an NDA was. She's like, right, NDA. And so now, like, she loved the idea of this NDA, like, that you've got this secret that is like a contract and you can't break it. So as a result, I am under verbal at the NDA with her. So I can't tell the details of her business. But I can say that I started off by going, right, piece of paper, I'm coming up with a structure. So what are your values? You know, regardless of what the product ends up being, like, what's most important? And right off the bat, I came up with three values. He's just like, those are good. Those are really good. Right, excellent. Moving on. What do you want to help? Who do you want to help? And what do you want to help them to solve? Straight, immediately, boom, boom, boom. He's just like, oh wow, like, these are the things that as most entrepreneurs I've worked with, and myself included, perhaps even the worst, like, take weeks, months, or years to distill. She's just like knocking out the park. So at some point, maybe she will allow me to share it, because I have photos of me basically like writing down what she said.
Yeah
I even tried to video her doing it, because I thought at some point I'm gonna need to prove that I'm literally just writing it word for word. And she told me to stop videoing.
Under the NDA.
Like, this wasn't part of our NDA, put that away. So I don't know, and I won't pressure either of them into anything. Like, my wife and I are really passionate about, we just want them happy. They don't need to be rich. It's helpful to be comfortable, but they really should just pursue things that they're passionate about and enjoy. But I do love the fact that she's interested.
That's brilliant. So do you have a view then along those lines, which we do in our family, that they have to earn their money? So we don't give pocket money until it's earned.
Agreed. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be starting a business, but that instilling that sense of what is the value of money. It doesn't grow on trees, you know.
Yeah.
Life lessons, really.
Yeah, definitely. Firmly. We're not yet at a point where they seek money or like have a particular clear need. Like, for them at the moment, it's more like, oh, can you put this on my list for Santa? So it's more that. However, they do understand that if they wanted other stuff that was outside of that, then they would need money. They know that they have money in piggy banks, and when they get money from Tooth Fairy, etc., that's where it's going. And we have said that if you want to earn more money, you can earn it. And they have done stuff that gets them 20p, 50p here and there. They haven't yet fully embraced that. I haven't seen them go like, right, you know, I basically want a job, and how do I get more money, and how do I set up a business that earns me money? There's idle interest. So, and I'm not pressuring it. So if I wanted to encourage it, I suppose I'd have to come up with things that I want them, that they would need to pay for, you know, and then do it that way. But at the moment, like, their activities are generally really wholesome, you know. They would, like, my son wants to learn to do sewing and knitting and you know, helping with the gardening. And you know, my daughter wants to write down songs she comes up with in her head and do pictures and do reading. So as a result, I'm not really keen to be like, no, don't be doing that instead.
I think that's fair enough. Yeah. Well, get on a laptop and start researching your next business. No, I think best to keep them outside doing wholesome activities. So what would your advice be then, again, to all these parents stuck in this rut? of wanting more for themselves, their families, for their legacy, for all the reasons, flexibility. Where's the first, what's that first small step anybody can take, anybody, regardless of ability, experience, confidence, just to get the ball rolling with starting your own business?
Yeah, so it's even within that, it depends where you're at. So mm-hmm. when we're talking about starting a business, you know, we could essentially be talking about a 5-year period, mm-hmm. everywhere from I think I might start a business one day through yeah. to through to like I'm still struggling to get this business off the ground. Like mm-hmm. what's the bit that's missing here? So it does depend a bit on where they're at, and as a result, my answer to that would be, make that your priority to work out where you are in the journey. What is the bottleneck that's holding you back, and get guidance from someone who has gone on that route, because mm-hmm. they will not only tell you the mistakes that they made, the successful route that they took. Mm-hmm. And I would argue the mistakes is more important, because yeah. there are millions of ways to create a successful business that, and some can't be replicated. Whereas there are a relatively small number of ways to fail mm. in the business. And therefore, if you can close those off, yep. you're more likely to be successful. So I think that's the generic advice for wherever mm. you're at. Mm. I'd say if I could group the most common challenge for people early on is the proving that there's a market for the thing that you offer yeah. and that there's yep. sufficient demand for it and that you can sell it. I think too many startups spend too long creating the website, the logo, the branding, all these sorts of things without first just go get some sales.
I'm smiling because that was absolutely me 2 years ago.
Yeah, indeed. and so there's a brilliant book for that, which would be the Mom Test. Awful name of the book for various reasons. But the premise is sound, which is you can't use, in the reason it's called the Mom Test, like you can't use your mom to tell you whether you think you've got a big, good business yeah. or not, because they will say yes, yeah. regardless. It's not strictly true. At one point, my mum told me that I should stop doing Spider Gap and instead focus on consulting, which fine. But in general, most yeah. mums will tell you that, you know, what you're doing is great, and you will think what's great is great. Mm-hmm. And so essentially, it kind of gives you that roadmap of how do you test the idea, and for a more supported route, you should check out what Michael is now doing over at the Parentpreneur Accelerator. Mm-hmm. You know, some brilliant advice on there. He's got the podcast running, you know, got the previous episodes there, and that actually, in fact, remembering now, it's episode 5 of the podcast. Bear in mind, it was like 2016-17 when that went live. Like, I literally gave step by step, here's how to do it. The resources and products that were perhaps referenced back then may not still be available, but the guides and the tips are there. So firstly, I'd go check that out and so on. But like, that's what you need to be doing is yeah. really test that you've got a proposition. I think the next group and the next stage, and possibly what you're kind of alluding to, like often getting that stuck between what I was describing as step 1 and 2, like mm-hmm. between finding out what works and then starting to scale it, is that, and it'd be interesting to talk about like what you feel are perhaps some of the most common blockers. Mm-hmm. But I think it is taking that leap to start to hand stuff over to someone else. And mm-hmm. initially, you can start super small. Like, I've spoken to, you know, podcast interviewers mm-hmm. who say that they're editing the podcast themselves, they're publishing the podcast themselves, yep. they're scheduling the yep. social media. You know, I did a TV interview where the host of that said that they spend all Sunday scheduling posts on their own social media mm-hmm. to like share about that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that could be a step-by-step process that you mm-hmm. hand over to someone who is rather inexpensive.
Yeah.
And you get a whole day back, which you can either spend with your family and get your Sunday back, or mm-hmm. you can use that 8 hours mm-hmm. to grow the business further. And yeah. I think that's yeah. it. I think the common misconception is that you suddenly need to document the whole business. That's not true. You need to start with 1 or 2 responsibilities at a time. And then once you've got a few that you can hand over, you can start grouping them into roles. Mm. So you might say, well, actually, I've got a social media manager role, or I've got a marketing manager role, or I've got a salesperson role. Mm-hmm. And you've grouped together a few tasks. Like for salesperson, it might be, I need someone to conduct the sales call once we've qualified this lead. I need them to follow up people who are in our pipeline. I need them to match the needs, agree the proposal and the sale, and send an invoice. I need them to chase payments. And it's like, that's currently taking me 3 days a week of my time. Therefore, that's going to be what I'm hiring into the business. And so I just need to document those things, turn it into some onboarding that they can follow, and as a result, get that handed over. And suddenly you end up with 3 days a week. Initially, that's terrifying because you think, well, what the hell am I going to do with the time? And now I'm paying someone else money that would have come to me. Yeah. But the process of growth is, you will find, like, as long as you're always asking, what's the most valuable thing I could be spending my time doing? What's the next bottleneck I need to address? And typically you'll go, okay, you know, either it's on the operations and delivery side, or it's on demand. Like, it's always one of those two sides. It's either generating demand or serving that demand. And you're never perfectly balanced. Never like, you're one end or the other to some extent. And that's where you need to be spending your time as the entrepreneur. And as soon as you get stuck in the day-to-day, you start to plateau.
Yeah. And that's, to answer your question, the blockers I currently have are twofold, I suppose. The first one is my money mindset gremlins of saying, I can't possibly invest any money into employees, outsourcing, freelancers, because I haven't got enough in the business. But of course, you have to speculate to accumulate.
Yeah.
And then the second one is the control freak element of, but I can't possibly get someone else to be doing this because only I know how to do it, which I'm sure is very typical as well.
Yes, very typical. And I laugh because I identify heavily with both of those. Those are certainly my two blockers, along with also thinking that I wouldn't be able to manage the people, and that why would people want to work for me and so on, was kind of my third one. But yeah, certainly those. And the control freak one really held on to for a long time, even after I'd hired members of staff. I remember sharing with them that I'd done my 360 feedback and got their feedback, and that their feedback was basically telling me I need to delegate more. And I was saying to them openly, yeah, this is my top weakness. I am a control freak. I really struggle with this. And here's what I will be doing to address that. Mm-hmm. And I'd like your support in doing that. And if you think like, I'm being more control freaky and there's an opportunity to delegate, please highlight to me because I want to change that. And so I think that's a useful technique for any weakness you've got. Share that with other people, and quite quickly you'll find that you start to address it. And the hilarious thing is, now I would say that my team would, like, particularly new members of the team, they can't even imagine that I was A, a bad manager, B, a control freak, C, bad at delegation. Like, they'd consider me as one of the best managers at doing those things.
Yeah.
And yet, it was only, we're talking, you know, a small number of years that shift happened over. So in terms of addressing a couple of those, so one is the money mindset, it is a hard one to overcome. One thing that I was reminded of by a business coach of mine is that employees, and it works with freelancers too, are fantastic because you get the benefit up front and pay them afterwards. So let's say you hire someone, they start on the 1st of next month. You get them, typically, you get them working for you for a month before you then do their payroll.
Yeah.
Now, that does a few things, but it means that cash flow wise, you're able right off the bat to get like 4 weeks worth out of them before you're having to pay. The key then is, how do you quickly get them up to speed? And that's one of the problems that we have solved with Air Manual, which is my newest business, where we make the onboarding journey really easy for the new joiner to get up to speed more quickly. And I'd recommend people check out airmanual.co, go to resources, and you'll find some guides around how to sort out your onboarding. Because when you do that, we've seen businesses where they're able to get people up to speed in adding value in 1 to 2 weeks rather than 2 to 4 months. And that's a huge difference. When you're worried about the money, you don't want to spend 4 months worth of their salary and then find out whether they can do the job. You want to find that out within their first month, so that worst case scenario, it's 1 month salary, which is like, you know, 2 to 4K, 5K max, if they're getting really highly paid. And then, you know, if it's not working out, gone.
Yep.
Like, you know, that, and so you can reduce the risk. And you can reduce the risk even further by using freelancers or using part-time or family members or whatever. So there are ways in which you can do that to test. In terms of the control freak element, the key is creating, is documenting the step-by-step and adding the detail where needed so that they can deliver at quality, and then walking through it with them, getting them to follow it. You're there for questions. Mm-hmm. Any questions they ask, update the document so that it answers the question rather than telling them and expecting them to remember. And then every time there's another question or a mistake, go back to the document and say, okay, how do we change it? How do we make sure this mistake doesn't happen? So for example, I remember handing over the editing of my podcast back when I was doing the Parentpreneur Accelerator. And I thought, you know, how am I going to make sure that the quality of these episodes is as good?
Mm.
And so what I did is created the process, went through all that. And then I would listen back to the episode. And if there were any things I'm not happy about, I'd go back to the process and say, what needs to be in here so this doesn't happen? And over relatively small time, I'd say 3 episodes, we got to a point where I never needed to review them again. And so I stopped listening to my own episodes.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of time saving, that was absolutely huge. And it didn't take that long to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And of course, it meant that then I was saving myself, we were doing them weekly. It's probably, if you're doing editing like that, it's easily a couple of hours, 3-4 hours, saving like half a day a week, having invested that time. And that's what we find with our clients. Like, I was working with a business owner who we spent, he was spending 3 hours a day sending quotes to clients that were, you know, posted, they're requesting a quote for printing in their, for printing for that business. And so he was spending 3 hours a day writing up these quotes, 15 hours a week writing up quotes and send them over. And he said, I know, Alexis, I need to document it and hand it over, but I figure it'll probably take about 8 hours and I've just not made the time. Now, of course, even if it is 8 hours, he'd make that time back within a week.
Yeah, half a week, yeah.
So he just, you know, in theory, it's like, come on, mate, block out your Saturday, get it done. But in reality, he was already working Saturdays and Sundays, right? He was already doing crazy hour weeks and couldn't see a way out. So I said to him on the call, we've got 45 minutes left of this call. Let's see what we can do. And live on the call, we documented the whole thing end to end and all the detail. On the follow-up call, we got it handed over to his team. And as a result, they were doing the quotes.
Yep.
And I remember we always do an impact review with our consulting clients. And so I said, you know, one of the questions is, what's been the most valuable? And I kind of went, okay, the question's what's been the most valuable, but I'm assuming it's that you're getting 780 hours a year back. And he said, no. I said, what? That's not the most valuable. He said, no, the most valuable is that now customers are getting quotes in under an hour rather than 2 to 3 days.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And you think, whoa, imagine what impact that would have on conversion rates. Imagine if you submit a request to a printing company to say, how much would it be to get this van printed or this these shirts printed? Which company do you go with? The one that replies within an hour or the one that took 3 days?
Yeah. Absolutely, especially in the world we live in now.
Yeah, and so then you go, oh, wow. So not only have we freed up 15 hours per week of his time, so basically giving him a weekend back, like initially, and there was more to be done, but also we've increased the likelihood that that activity is valuable and turns into sales, which means you can grow the business. And so it's stuff like that where you just go, oh, this is crazy. Like, that was 2 hours that we invested to get 780 over the next year. The return on investment of some of this can be huge, but I think people don't make the time and don't make that leap. So that's why I say, like, that's where you're going to do it. So,
Well, I feel now entirely committed to motivating myself.
Fantastic. And
creating the time to sort out my step 1-2 leap. So, Alexis, thank you so much for being on today. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Parentpreneur, we didn't talk about Mums in Technology, but you have been involved with Mums in Technology, etc. So for anyone who wants not advice and coaching necessarily, but just to find out more about you in that space and also your businesses, which we've talked about as well, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, so the best place to find me would be, so I'm on various social media. So I'm on LinkedIn particularly is my main one, but then also on Facebook and Instagram and a little bit of Twitter. I'm Alexis Kingsbury. There aren't many of them. There's very few that are male. And there's anyone that's the co-founder of Air Manual and so on. So find me on social media. I'm always sharing, you know, videos and resources and things to help people kind of address these sorts of problems. Plus, if you go to airmanual.co, And then go onto the resources. You can get various guides on roll, you know, how to do sort out onboarding, how to sort out your processes. We've got various stuff there, so I highly recommend that. But as I say, reach out. Like I'm often surprised at how much people hold back from just asking a question.
Yeah,
you know, yes, it's hard to get hours and hours of my time one to one, because that's expensive and valuable. Mm-hmm. But sending me a quick message on LinkedIn or whatever, it's saying, hey, I'm struggling with this, or post a reply on one of my posts asking mm-hmm. a question or sharing a bottleneck you've got, I will be able to connect you to someone or give you a resource or give you some advice or whatever. I'm happy to spend that time, but you have to first make that leap and put yourself out there to get that.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the key step in anything like this, taking that risk, taking that leap. Mm-hmm. into starting something of your own, you have to ask for help. You have to be willing to ask for help and get the support you need. And no one can do it on their own. No one does it on their own.
No, they don't. And there's not a single successful entrepreneur that out there who has done it off entirely what is only in their brain.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't work like that.
Exactly. Great. Well, thank you so much for being on. Good luck with your two kids and their entrepreneurial journey. And when the NDA is lifted, please come back and tell me what it is so I can share.
Yeah, as I bet by then, I'd be like, oh yeah, you know that unicorn business that eclipsed mine and acquired it years ago. I'm finally allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, finally. But good luck to her, definitely. Thank you so much.
No, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me.
To work with me, find out more at ishamari.com, connect with me on LinkedIn, or check out my free resources and quizzes at ishamari.com/resources.